Blog Talk Radio.
We would have you understand that the flame that you are burns eternally and shall never go out, no matter how bright you allow yourself to become. We shall have you understand that you exist now and always shall, and you always have, because now is the only time and the only place and the only existence there is and always has been and ever shall be. You are eternal. You are infinite. You are spirit. You are body. You are mind. You are heart. You are soul. You are an idea. You are an expression. You are a thought. You are a dream of the infinite creation. But that is reality, and all reality is couched within your dream. You contain it all. You are the whole expression in your own individualized way. You are the matrix. The matrix is you. You are everything. Everything comes from you. Everything gives birth to you as you reinforce the existence of everything and everyone. All that is, the infinite creation, the fabric of existence, chose you. Chose that you should exist. Chose you. Consciously chose you. You are in that way, therefore, blessed. And we would have you understand that. Simply because of the fact that you exist, you are blessed. For you are created out of divine material, out of divine light. You are the infinite creator. And your existence was a conscious decision, a conscious thing, a conscious choice. Act in like manner. Be of like mind. Respect yourselves. Love yourselves unconditionally. For out of unconditional love were you created. And out of unconditional love shall you create anything you desire. Begin to feel the energy of your interlinking with all thought forms, all consciousness, all civilizations, all eyes, all ideas, all mind, all hearts, all soul, all spirit is one. And you are one within that sea, within that pool. Know that you are the fabric and the essence of the galactic energy. Not one of you, in that sense, can be removed from the matrix without the collapse of the entire structure. You are integral in that way. You are essential in that way. And we would have you understand that because you are interconnected in this way, because everything you do has impact within the entirety of creation, that you deserve to exist in this way and you deserve to be the fullest individual you can imagine yourself to be, that you deserve to manifest all the things you can conceive of, that you deserve the existence you have been given or it would not have been granted to you, that you deserve all the love you can imagine because love is what you are made out of, that you deserve all the light you can create in your life because light is what you are made out of. Feel in the beating of your heart that it keeps pace with the rhythm and the pulse of the spinning of all the galaxies, of the fabric of existence itself, of the universal heart of infinite creation. For you all beat within that heart, and not a one of you is outside the heart of all that is. You are the blood and the life force of God itself. It is your force and your life as well. You are it, and it is you. Out of your dreams, be born. Out of your heart, be alive. Out of your soul, be light. For you are nothing else.
Listening to Revolutionary
life. I'm your host, Gary. And tonight, Revolutionary Lights have another title for you tonight. And this title is called Turning Lead into Gold. The Kim Black Mystery. This show tonight, if you're new here, Revolutionary Life is here every weekday night, Monday through Friday, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. From 7 to 9 Central Standard Time, Monday through Friday. All right? Our topics vary, and so you never know what they're going to be. You can always hit that follow sign, and you'll be alerted when we're on the air. All right, we just deal with a lot of topics, but they all are things that affect our lives every day, some directly, some indirectly, but they all affect our lives, and we deal with these subjects from a revolutionary point of view. It makes us different here. Same subjects, maybe, that affect our lives, but we have to look at them from a point of view of change, and that's all revolution is. Revolution is just change. The revolutionary positions themselves on the vanguard. We just want to be on the vanguard of change. We're not afraid of change. If you're on the front of change when it happens, and it's got to happen, it's constant, right? It's one thing constant in the universe, and that's change. So change is coming. We just want to ride it in. If you're in the front of change, guys, you may have something to say about what that change looks like. If you're on the ass end of things, you might not have anything to say about anything. So we try to keep our fingers on the pulse around here. Tonight, guys, tonight I'm going to tell you how to turn lead or any base metal. The title is a little misleading, but it's not, because it's something you might remember, lead to gold. But the truth of the matter is I'm going to tell you how to turn any base metal into pure gold. And it's an ancient alchemical process. So prepare yourself tonight. I'm going to take you back, and I'm going to bring you forward. And let's hope when I'm done, you will understand how this process works. So I want you to reminisce on that. I'm finna give you a little music. I'll be right back. Thank you. and you're listening to Revolutionary Life right here on Blog Talk Radio. And again, we're here every weekday night, Monday through Friday. It is Friday night, guys, July the 2nd, 2021. We're here every weekday night. All of our shows are archived. If you cannot stay for the entire show, guys, this show will be archived and set on demand. So if you'll scroll down our site, you will see an on-demand section. This show here will be on demand in about an hour. In about an hour after we're done. And so if you can't stay for the whole thing, you can get it all later. I hope you can, but if you miss it, you didn't. It's on demand. You can go right back in an hour after we finish tonight and play this whole show back. Hopefully everything goes smoothly. If it don't, guys, somebody put in the chat that you can't hear me or something went out or something like that. Just notify me. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I have a very important, very serious discussion to have with you tonight. I don't know how to tell you how deep the subject gets, but you're going to hear it, some of it. And I hope you can take something away from here that you can use, that we all need. All right? That's my goal tonight. So our title tonight again is Turning Lead into Gold. And I told you I use that title because you might be familiar with turning lead to gold. But I'm truly going to discuss with you tonight an alchemy or an alchemical process, let's say, of turning any base metal, not just lead, any base metal to gold. Pure gold. I hope you're ready. Guys, this story begins in ancient Egypt. Ancient Egypt. Pre-pharaonic dynastic Egypt. I'm not sure if you guys ever delve into the Egyptian history, but there were a lot of dynasties. But there was an Egypt before the dynasties. All right. And around Memphis, as a matter of fact, and a place called Memphis in Egypt. And also a city in Egypt that was named after the Greeks who conquered it, Alexandria. You may be familiar with the library, one of the wonders of the world, the Library of Alexander. Another wonder of the world, the Lighthouse of Alexander. You see, in Egypt, guys, they had a library. In Egypt, they were making paper out of papyrus. The Greeks had never heard, nobody had heard of this until they got to Egypt. In fact, I told you, and another one of my presentations, if you who's been listening to some of my presentations, that Alexander the Great wrote in his memoirs that the first time he saw lighted streets at night was when he entered Egypt. He wasn't aware that in Egypt they was using a refined fuel, oil, for fuel. You remember Aladdin's lamp where the genie came out when you rubbed it? It wasn't about genies. It was an oil. And I'll go into that in another one of my presentations, guys. But in Egypt, in the Middle East, oil comes up out the ground by itself. Damn, that's oil pits. Damn near your oil just rises from the ground. It's damn near refined when it comes to the top. As a matter of fact, it's so refined that when they buy it, it's the most expensive oil. It's called sweet crude. So if you guys go to the business section and look up commodities and look up oil, of all the crude oil, you'll find some oil called sweet crude. It damn near refined when it comes up out of the ground, and it damn near comes up by itself. No pumps necessary. Anyway, guys, it's always done that since ancient times. The Greeks were still using tar and pitch to burn torches. So they were amazed that there were a light that could burn all night long. Oil. Oil lamps. You've seen them. Anyway, guys, so Egypt was pretty advanced for these cultures that came to Egypt. So let's stop right here. Egypt had been invaded. When you start getting all these dynasties, dynastic Egypt had been invaded early on by the Hyksos, the Hyksos people. They, you know, in war, conquest and enslavement is how Western Europe and Asia and these countries expanded themselves. They came to your country, and maybe they came to your leadership and told them that from now on, this country belongs to Greece. You got 3 days to decide whether you're going to submit to our rule or is there going to be war. And some people decided to fight. If they submitted or if they lost that fight, they were conquered by the invading nation. Ancient Egypt was invaded by the Hyksos. Later, it was invaded by the Greeks. You know that history, Alexander the Great. Later, the Greeks were kicked out. If you know about Cleopatra and Mark Antony, the Greeks were picked out by the Romans. And Rome took over Egypt. And I want you to know this, guys, because when you're reading about Egypt and you're hearing about ancient Egypt, be wary. Be very wary of what dynasties and what years they're talking about. Because all these later dynasties were Greek dynasties or Roman dynasties in Egypt. They called themselves pharaohs, yeah. But they were conquerors. They were not Egyptians. Right? I want you to remember that. Ancient Egypt. Pre-dynastic Egypt, when the pyramids and those things were built, the conquerors hadn't made it there yet. And so when you lose something, guys, like I said, when you lose something, you go back to when you last had it. We lost some knowledge in the process of all these invasions. If we want that knowledge back, we have to go back to whom we last had it. So we last had it in Egypt. We made it happen. We may have had it in the lost city of Atlantis, if that's a real thing. But we certainly had it in ancient Egypt. When its capital was Memphis. It's called the Old Kingdom. It is actually labeled that. So when you study ancient Egypt, try to back up a little bit, please, before the conquerors came in. And try to look at what's called the Old Kingdom. That's ancient Egypt. That's Egyptian. After the Romans kicked the Greeks out, the Romans took over in Egypt. The Romans later was kicked out by the Arabs. By the Arabs, who were also practicing invasion, conquest, and enslavement, war, That's how they build great civilizations in Western Europe. War, conquering people, and taking their shit, including them as slaves. So the Arabs ran the Romans out of Egypt. Well, the Roman Empire was falling apart by that time. And the Arabs, ladies and gentlemen, are there right now. There is Arabics in Egypt for one reason and one reason only today. The language is Arabic. The culture is Arabic because that's what conquest does. It demands that the people that it conquers accept their culture, their language. If you don't accept their culture and their language, they might kill you. Or at least they'll think you're too ignorant to learn or you're rebellious. And so Egypt was conquered, man. The language changed over time per conqueror. From the Greeks to the Romans to Latin to Arabic to this day, the Arabs are still there, walking around the pyramids like they built them. You don't hear much who Egypt invaded. How about that? You don't hear much about countries that Egypt conquered in its early days. Perhaps they didn't need to conquer anybody. Perhaps. But they got conquered many times. What are these people looking for in Egypt? Of all the places to conquer, why did all of these cultures choose to go into Egypt time and time again? Yeah, they wanted to. They were conquerors. They were conquering everybody. But when they got to Egypt, it blew their minds, the technology and what was going on, right? To the extent, guys, that it changed Greek culture forever. It changed Roman culture forever. Forever, and it changed yours, and I'm going to tell you how. The invasions did not just so they could take resources back to their country. They did that. But the invasions also sought out information and technology that Egypt had, that wherever country they conquered, they wanted to know what their science and religions were. In fact, Alexander the Great had his teacher with him when he conquered Egypt. His teacher was Aristotle. You may have heard of Aristotle, the Greek philosopher. That was Alexander the Great's teacher. And he followed Alexander into Egypt, where he found a library filled with papyruses, scrolls, made from a plant, paper made from a plant. And on those scrolls was mathematics, biology, astronomy, astrology, right? So much so, guys, that a school was set up in Egypt. To this day, they were known as the Egyptian mystery schools. In fact, Socrates' teacher trained in an Egyptian mystery school. And Socrates would tell his students, I've taught you everything I need to know that I can teach you here in Greece. If you need to know more, you have to go to Egypt. Now, they called it Egypt, but actually the Egyptians called it Kemet. So the Egyptians used the name Kim. So people began to use the name Kemet to describe Egypt. And Kemet translates into the black land, they say. Because the word Kem, K-H-E-M. Take note of this, guys. I'll be back to this in a minute. K-H-E-M means black to this day, actually. You will see it in the form of C-H-E-M, but K-H-E-M also means black. And so the black land was the land of Kim. I'm not sure if you guys are into things like the Hermes, the Emerald Tablets of Hermes, Hermes Trismegistus, the Hermetic teachings. Well, there is a set of tablets known as the Emerald Tablets. And in the Emerald Tablets, they talk about the people of Kem. All right. So Kemet was black land. Kem meaning black. Now, the Egyptians had a school. Well, it was known as the Egyptian Mystery School. In that school, they taught the mysteries of Kemet. All right? You have to understand something else, guys. Let me also give you a little context here. Try to follow me here. You're looking at a nation, a civilization in ancient Egypt, old kingdom, where religion and science did not bump heads as you see today. Science will say one thing, the church will say something different. If you can't believe in this and believe in both, because science is saying the world was created this way, the Bible is saying the world was created. So all these discoveries, and this didn't, you know, that ain't the only contradictions, right? I mean, the man who discovered, Sir Arthur Boyle, who discovered the vacuum, had to go up against the church because they said there was no such thing as a vacuum, where there's nothing, no air, no nothing. They also, so scientists were going up against the church in ancient times all the time. In fact, secret societies developed just so they could study ancient Egyptian mysteries without being called a heretic and burned at the stake by the church. Secret societies developed to study mysteries that if they got caught studying them by the church, they could be arrested, called a heretic, and maybe burned at the stake. That's right, guys. Some of y'all will remember the Spanish Inquisitions put on by the church. We'll get to those someday. But they had to hide to study these things even in the 16th, 14th, 15th centuries and the 17th centuries. And so even today, tell the truth. And so you couldn't be both a Christian or a religious person and believe in some scientific things today. In ancient Egypt, there was no division between religion and science. They informed each other, science to religion and religion to science. There was no contradiction. They weren't bumping heads between scientific understanding and religious understanding, spiritual stuff. You don't hear me. You don't hear me. Let me put it this way, guys. If you do not separate math from biology, and they didn't, not the way we do today, a kid goes and learns math over here, goes to this class to learn biology. There was no separation of the sciences in ancient Egypt. In ancient Egypt, there was no separation between astronomy and biology. So they could easily have a science called astrology, a combination of astronomy, the study of the planets and stars, and biology and how those stars affect you and me. astrology could easily come out of a culture that didn't make a difference, that didn't separate biology from astronomy. A country that, a civilization that didn't separate math from biology could easily have a science called numerology, how numbers affect our lives. These things didn't come up out of some ignorance. These things like astrology and numerology and these things did not come up out of ignorance. These things come about because they did not break their sciences down into pieces and departments like they were two separate things. They understand that it was just one thing. Religion, science, all the sciences are related to each other, aren't they? Aren't they? When you get down to the quantum level, all the sciences are related to each other. And so, guys, that's why they're looking for the unified field theory, how all the forces on are come from one force, derived from one force, a unity. But in ancient Egypt, they didn't separate the sciences. So if you can wrap your mind around a time when those sciences weren't separated, you can begin to understand how lead was turned to gold. Because their spirituality and their science was not separate. The minute, even though the Greeks and the Romans and the Arabs and the Hyksos and people invaded Egypt, they were looking for something. Oh, yeah. They were all in search of something that they had heard was going on in ancient Egypt. They had heard that the ancient Egyptians were taking base metals, not just lead, any base metal. They could take a base metal and turn it into gold. To this day, when they dig up these old, when they bring up some of these king's tombs and stuff like Tutankhamun, his mask is made out of pure, pure gold. Just the mask itself on this mummy was pure gold. They wanted to know where this gold is coming from. They went to the Greeks. They all went to Egyptian mystery schools because they heard they could learn this technique in these schools. But the Egyptians, I don't know, the Egyptians didn't tell them everything, or they didn't understand. They missed it. And I just told you why they missed it. Because they separated spirituality from science. All of a sudden, a scientist was on one side of the fence saying one thing, and religion ended up on the other side of the fence saying another. What the Egyptians could not teach them is that there was no difference. There shouldn't be a difference. One should inform the other. Imhotep is a great architect, but he was also a priest. He was also a priest, as well as a genius mathematician and chemist. Guys, what everybody went to the mystery schools to learn, what everybody who invaded Egypt wanted to know, was how were they making lead and other base metals into gold? They had heard a rumor. And the Egyptians told them, you had to go to school. And we'll teach you how. And so the school had several rules and degrees and all that they had to go through. Some 30 years of study, really. And so everybody didn't make it. But they also tell me that the Egyptians didn't really want to tell these people, these greedy warring, conquering people the secret. And sure enough, they walked away from Egypt thinking they had stolen enough papyruses and information to figure it out on their own. And they never did. Well, I'll get to that. However, the Egyptians did have a method for changing base metal into gold. And it was associated with their spiritual practice, their religion, their creation story even. So when I get back, we're going to talk about how their spirituality and their science work together, discover the process, end the process of turning metals, base metals, into gold. Stay tuned. I'll be right back. Let me give you a little music, guys. and you're listening to Revolutionary Life. My name is Gary. I'm your host tonight. And tonight on Revolutionary Life, we're talking about turning lead into gold. And I told you, in truth, turning any base metal into gold. I told you in the beginning of this presentation about all the invasions of ancient Egypt. I mentioned the Hyksos. I mentioned the Greeks. I mentioned the Romans. I mentioned the Arabs. Why all these people? Africa is a big place, continent. Why were all these people in such a big hurry to take Egypt? They were after gold. Not just gold, guys. The word had got out that in Egypt, they was turning base metals into gold. The Greeks called it the Chem, or black. Chem meaning black. The Chem mystery. Now, later on, guys, you've heard this before, I'm sure. Later on, it was forbidden to study this stuff under the Holy Roman Empire. Once the Roman Catholic Church and the Roman Army and Constantine and the rest, and they changed, they called it black magic, but it was never called, it was, they wanted the people to resist it, right? But it was never called black magic. That's something that came up by the church. No. It was called the black mystery by the Greeks, or the Chem mystery. You would call it today chemistry. If you look the word up, C-H-E-M and K-H-E-M, all translate to one word, black. So today you say chemistry. And I don't know if you know why. Because the Greeks call it the Chem mystery. And they wanted to know this mystery. How in hell are these people turning base metals into gold? And so they went to Egypt to find out. All of them did. And the Arabs are still there trying to figure it out. To this day. Now, the Arabs, of course, unlike the church, Catholic Church and Romans and whatnot, the Arabs called it just, they just said the mystery of the blacks, they called it al-chem, of the chems, of the blacks, al-chem. You call it alchemy. Today you call it alchemy. The Arabs called it of the Chem, of the blacks, al-Chem. They wanted to know alchemy also. They all did. That's why they rushed to Egypt. Africa is a big continent. They all wanted Egypt. The alchemy that they were being taught also needed them to accept and understand the religion, the spirituality of Egypt. They brought their own religions and gods or whatever. The science, they did not want the spirituality. And so they tried to either fashion it into their own or resist it, which meant that they never learned the secret. You're going to learn the secret. Are you familiar, anybody out there, hopefully, if you're familiar with your Chem mystery class, you know there's a periodic chart that they show you of all the elements that they found. One of the elements of gold is gold. There's a whole bunch of elements. Lead is an element. Oxygen, element. Hydrogen, an element. As a matter of fact, let's just stop right there. As a matter of fact, on the elemental chart, on your periodic chart of chemicals, of elements, the very first one, it's labeled number one, as a matter of fact, the very first one element is hydrogen. Has one electron. It's an atom made up of one electron and one proton, made up of one negatively charged electron and one positively charged, that is nucleus, proton. And because one is negative, one and positive, they attract each other. And because one is negative and one is positive, they cancel each other's power out. And so they are effectively neutral. Hydrogen doesn't by itself attract or repel anything else around it because it has no charge of its own. It contains charges. I hope we learned this. It contains a positive and negative charge, but because they're equal, they cancel each other out in terms of domination, which one is more positive or negative. And since they cancel each other out, a positive one minus a negative one leaves zero. One from one is nothing, a zero, not nothing, but zero. And so they're positive and the negative, the electron and the proton cancel each other out. And so hydrogen has no charge. It doesn't attract anything. It doesn't repel anything. And it's number one on the periodic chart. Okay, guys. So here's the thing. According to ancient Egyptian spirituality, in fact, in their creation story, everything on earth and in the cosmos came from one. That one was referred to as Atum, A-T-U-M. All right? So the creation story has this birth of Atum, the one. From Atum came all of every other element in the universe. So their religion told them that there's only one and everything is a derivative, everything derived from that one. If you look at your periodic charts of elements in your chemistry class, you will see that one, the first labeled number one on the chart, is hydrogen. All right, get your mind around this, that the Egyptians said there is nothing else other than hydrogen. The most abundant element on earth or in the cosmos is hydrogen. The sun uses it as a fuel. It's in the air. It's the most abundant element found. It's hydrogen. Well, the ancient Egyptian says there is no other elements besides hydrogen. Or if there was, it derived itself from hydrogen. All right? Hydrogen is number one because it has one, it has one electron. Helium is number two. It has one electron, and of course, every time it has an electron, it's got a proton. So it had one proton, one electron. right? They cancel each other out. It was neutral. Helium is number two on the chemical chart. It happens to have two electrons, two protons. You will always find an equal number of protons. Now, to electrons and a neutral atom. Now, lithium, I think, is the next one on the list. And it's next, and it's called number three. Why is that? It has three electrons and three protons. All right. The ancient Egyptians say that helium is just hydrogen. Hydrogen is one electron, one proton. So the ancient Egyptians says all you do is you add two hydrogen atoms together, and you got two electrons now and two protons. Once you have two electrons and two protons, you no longer have hydrogen. You have a new element called helium. But its birthplace was in hydrogen. It derived from two joined hydrogen atoms. Hydrogen has one electron, one proton, two hydrogen atoms together makes two electrons and two protons, but it's no longer hydrogen now. It's called helium. If you took three hydrogen atoms, you know, a hydrogen atom only has one electron, one proton. But if you took three of them and put them together, you no longer would have hydrogen or helium. You'd have number three on your periodic chart, lithium. The Egyptians tried to explain to them that it's only one element out there, just as in their religion. And it was what y'all called hydrogen, which is number one on your chart. And then you got all these other elements out there, as though they're objectively different. And the Egyptians tried to tell you that they are not objectively different. So, if gold, protons, all gold is hydrogen eight times, period. What they tried to teach them was that these were not separate elements. Turning lead into gold was, since lead had nine, let's say I think lead has nine electrons and nine protons, of course, in its elemental form, then by removing one hydrogen atom from lead, it will no longer have nine electrons and nine protons. It will only have eight electrons and eight protons, effectively making it gold. It cannot stay lead without those other two, without that electron and that proton, that hydrogen atom, that's all it is, being removed from it. All the Egyptians were doing in their alchemy was trying to say that if you understood that they're all hydrogen, that there has never been more than one, there was never one original element. Any other element is just an increase or a decrease of hydrogen atoms. Hydrogen is the most abundant atom on Earth. If you learn to combine hydrogen atoms, you can make any element on the periodic chart. And any element includes gold. So if we got 10 electrons and 10 protons, whatever that element is, I'm not sure. I'm not looking at the chart right now. If you remove two of those electrons and two of those protons, which are be effectively helium, And then if you, which is made up of just two hydrogen atoms, one electron, one proton per hydrogen atom, makes two, that's helium. If you remove those two from something that has 10 electrons, that something will now have 8 electrons and 8 protons. That means that whatever that element was the day before, now it's gold. It can't help but be gold. Since an electron and a proton don't look different, I mean, don't change from element to element. An electron is an electron, a proton is a proton, no matter what it makes up. Even if it makes up you or this computer you're looking at. Everything is made of electrons and protons. And electrons and protons are identical. It's just their arrangement of electrons and protons that makes an element or not. It's their bonding that makes an element or not. And so the chemical bond that makes all elements, all derived primarily, and if not only, from the use of hydrogen, that little hydrogen, number one on your chart, the addition and the removal of hydrogen atoms. You don't need any other atoms because all atoms are the same. You just need the right number of atoms and to bond them in an arrangement. The Egyptians tried to teach them about the one atom in the world that gives birth to everything. We call the one we call hydrogen. Now, and again, guys, I told you that one of the most abundant minerals, one of the most abundant chemicals, elements on in the cosmos, anywhere, it seems, is hydrogen. It's everywhere. Your chemical lesson and training is the bonding. Forget about the other atoms, other elements. What the only thing you need is hydrogen. The only thing we ever need. With it, we can create every other element on that chart and then some. Because the spiritual teaching in ancient Egypt has always been that there is only one, and everything derives from that one. Everybody went to learn the black mystery, chemistry, or what the Arabs call alchemy. But they didn't accept the religion, the spirituality that went along with it. Today, just like then, they attempted everything they knew, shortcuts, everything they knew to affect this change in material. By mixing materials of different kinds. And if you ever study alchemy or you ever get into the alchemical studies, there's all kinds of elements and processes that they use. What they don't know or what they don't understand and what they won't understand is that it is because of their separation of the sciences, biology over here, mathematics over here, because of their separation of science from spirituality. They don't know how. They are still failing to bond hydrogen atoms such that they become. The sun does it all the time. The sun is filled with hydrogen. And every now and then, it will create helium. So where did that helium come from? It came from the bonding of two hydrogen atoms. The sun has a process going on it where it can produce the type of conditions that will allow you to bond hydrogen atoms. Well, it won't allow you to, but it will bond hydrogen atoms. And all of a sudden, they see the sun producing, here's the sun made of hydrogen, burning from hydrogen mostly. All of a sudden, they're seeing helium come from the sun. Oh, where did that come from? They realize now is that it was the fusion of just two hydrogen atoms. That's why number two on your periodic chart is helium. Now, I don't know. Let's bring it back to today. I don't know if they figured this out because I just heard recently. I just heard recently that China has created a fusion reactor. And it's called that because it doesn't create energy by splitting atoms. That in fact, it creates energy by fusing atoms together. It's a fusion, called a fusion reactor. And they tested it the other day and it got a few degrees hotter, they say, than the sun. Now that's interesting because the sun has the ability to turn hydrogen, to bond hydrogen atoms, fuse them together. So a hydrogen atom with one electron and one proton fused together with another and another and another will continue to make elements. They're figuring this out now. The ancient Egyptians tried to explain this process to them then. But maybe today, who knows, the Chinese has the ability and the willingness and the understanding that now all they need is hydrogen. And if they have a fusion reactor that could get as hot as the sun, they can begin to fuse those hydrogen atoms. And if they fuse eight of them, the element they will produce is pure gold. Gold is eight electrons, eight protons. That's eight hydrogen atoms, nothing more. They have alchemists in Europe have blown up laboratories in themselves attempting this, guys. In these laboratories, looking for something they call the Philosopher's Stone. It's called. You might be familiar with the term the Philosopher's Stone. This is an alchemist. Or our chemical book, and it's all about this pursuit of gold. Wherever they hear gold being produced, that causes massive invasions. Now, I'll tell you, let me bring it on up. When the Spanish came here to Central and South America, they conquered Central and South America. They conquered the Maya, the Inca, the Aztec, made them speak Spanish, made them accept Catholicism or die. But what they couldn't do, what frustrated them to no end, is they couldn't find out where all this gold was coming from. The Spanish was after that gold. They called it the city. They was told that there was a city somewhere in Central and South America, they refer to as El Dorado. El Dorado, the city of gold. And they searched and they tortured people to find out where this gold was coming from. They had gold earrings. When they got there, the Spanish saw that these people had gold bracelets, gold earrings, gold masks. Gold was everywhere. And they start snatching it off of them and sending it back to Spain. Now they wanted to know. I'm sorry. Now they demanded to know where the gold was coming from. And they killed and tortured. Nobody told them. So they went deeper into Central and South America. But one of the things they were looking for was the city of El Dorado. They heard that in that city, everything was made of gold. So the gold rush, even in this country, to the California, have moved armies and people. And that's no different from the invasions of ancient Egypt. Why are all of these, of all the African nation, continent, why are all these different cultures hitting Egypt? One of the things was for alchemy. One of the things was for chemistry, the chem mystery, the black mystery. Was the name of the game. Finding gold. Shit. They could not find the gold in Central and South America when the Spanish came over here, but they took it off of people. And they took their amulets and they took their golden statues and masks and whatnot. And they took all that shit back to Spain. Queen Isabella was 16 years old, but her throne was made of gold. From the ears and noses and wrists of conquered people. What they failed to do is find the city of El Dorado. So many of these invasions, you know, had nothing to do with converting these people. I mean, the British and the Belgians, when they invaded Africa to colonize it, they told their people that they were going to spread the three C's, Christianity, civilization, and commerce. And the people said, oh, that's nice. Go ahead, and funded them. Of course, they were going there to exploit and expropriate these people's resources. They didn't say that. They didn't say Leopold would be cutting their hands off if they didn't dig holes fast enough. For diamonds or gold. They went to South Africa for diamonds and gold. That was their motivation for conquest. They failed to learn the secret of fusing hydrogen, guys. But that secret, the sun already knew. But they didn't know. The ancient Egyptians knew. But they didn't know. The Europeans, the invaders did not know. Nowadays, maybe they're getting there. My understanding is that China has a fusion reactor now. It doesn't split atoms. It fuses them together the way the sun does. If they can get it as hot as the sun, minimally, they can fuse two hydrogen atoms and make helium, three hydrogen atoms and make lithium, and just keep going until they get eight and they will have gold. I think up until now, that process have eluded them. But who knows? China may have figured something out. All right, understand that an understanding of chemistry, an understanding of electrons and protons and they're bonding. It's fundamental to everything that affects your life, all the elements in your life. And if you can fuse hydrogen and atoms, you don't have to worry about any other element. You can make any element. So today I'm paying attention to what's going on in China, because they figured out what the Egyptians knew and were capable of: reproducing conditions that could fuse hydrogen atoms. The most abundant atom in the universe is hydrogen. It's everywhere. If you can bond its atoms, you can create every element on the periodic chart, including gold. The secret is bonding hydrogen. The sun does it on its own because it has the conditions to do so. And maybe, and just maybe, China has figured out something. We'll see. That's my presentation, guys, on the black mystery. It wasn't black magic, as the church called it, because the church wanted them to stop studying it. It was heretic to be caught studying ancient Greek and Egyptian mysteries, alchemy, and the like. And so they hid and did it. That's why we have secret societies. If they were not secret, they would have been torn down and destroyed by the church. But it wasn't black magic. The Greeks called it the black mystery. You call it chemistry. The Arabs called it alchemy. And whenever you use the term alchemy, you're speaking Arabic, because the Romans had no word for that. So they used alchemy as well in the English language, but it's an Arabic term. They didn't have so much trouble with their church as the Christian church did when it comes to science. Too bad, because the Arabs are still there now, and they hadn't beat the Chinese in understanding this process. And perhaps the Chinese does, but we'll see. Most of the gold reserves in the world, guys, one of the largest gold reserves in the world today is in China. China owns most of the gold. China and a few other countries, I think, own most of the gold. It exists so far. Interesting enough. And if they got this fusion together, they may own even more. Guys, that's my rant. I'm turning lead to gold. There is a process yet to be figured out. But it's a simple one, and its concept is complicated, and it's actual function, putting it together. Now this is a call-in show. I do set aside a time for call-ins. So now we're going to try going into our call-in section. I got my chat room open. So I'll be taking questions and comments in the chat. I'll be monitoring that chat. And my phone number is area code 319-527-6060. This part of the show is your time to shine. I call it your time to shine. I set aside this part for you. My phone number is area code 319-527-6060. My chat room is open, and I'll be monitoring that chat and responding to those who write it. I'll give you a little music, and I'll be right back. Mm-hmm.
Solo. Solo. Alfa di Cam.
You're listening to Revolutionary Life. My name is Gary. I'm your host tonight. Tonight, we've been talking about turning lead into gold, the alchemy of the ancient Egyptians, the black magic that was hated by the church was the black mystery to the Egyptian, to the Greeks. They went to Egypt to study it, the Chem mystery that you call chemistry. The Arabs call it of the blacks, al-chem, that you call alchemy. What they never discovered through all their training, what little bit they had, was the Egyptians had already figured out that that was just one element. That's hydrogen. And today it is the most abundant element in the universe. The process of bonding hydrogen atoms, you can make any element on the chart. Gold, lead, aluminum, you name it, you can make it. With hydrogen, nothing more. The removal of hydrogen atoms or the addition of hydrogen atoms will create any element on that chart because there is only one element. And everything else is just a combination or a diminution of hydrogen. The sun does it all the time. It makes helium. How does it make helium? Helium has two electrons, and two protons. Well, all it does is fuse two hydrogen atoms together. They got one each. Fuse them together, they got two. No longer hydrogen, now you call it helium. The conditions to do that existed in ancient Egypt. They could reproduce. They could do what the sun could do here on Earth. As a matter of fact, guys, this science of being able to reproduce the heat of the sun also existed probably right here in Mesoamerica. Right here in the Aztec world, the Mayan world, the world of Tegucigalpa, the world of Chichen Itza, the world of Quetzalcoatl, where Montezuma, where these pyramid-shaped buildings exist. They're finding stones that look like glass almost. Indigenous rock, usually only created by the heat of a volcano. All they know is these rocks look like they have been subjected to a tremendous amount of heat. And now there's one guy who does alien stuff. He picks up one of these stones and he tells a whole story. He believes that there was a great alien war, and they had weapons that could produce this kind of heat. And so that's how these stones got this way, through that fight. I don't know about that story. That's an alien story. But the Olmecs is who the Hispanics, the Mexicans, contribute to the source of their technology. If you're familiar with the Olmec heads of ancient Mesoamerica, Central and South America, the Maya, the Aztec, right? They also have stones there that scientists can't figure out how anybody could create such a stone other than coming out of a volcano, indigenous rock, rock that damn near looked like glass. It's been melted so. What produces that kind of heat? You can't make a fire to produce that kind of heat, can you? Well, obviously, somebody did, somewhere, somehow, even in Mesoamerica. The technology for reproducing the sun's heat on Earth already existed. And I told you, just the other day, China did an experiment with a new machine it just created. It's called a fusion reactor, and they was able to get it to come just above even the heat of the sun. It was able to produce a heat not just equal to, but according to them, a little bit above the heat of the sun for the first time here on Earth that they know about. Now maybe they can fuse heat, hydrogen at will, the way the sun does. But the ability to fuse hydrogen atoms existed long before China existed. But the technology was lost. There are people who will answer this question. There are people who have attempted to show how the Egyptians built the pyramids by melting stone, pouring it. You can melt stone, guys, and pouring it into blocks. That's why the blocks are so perfect. That's why you can't stick a piece of paper in between those two blocks, even though they're just sitting on top of each other without any plaster in between to hold them together. And they've been there for thousands and thousands of years. And the pyramids still stand. How did they lift those blocks and all that? There's one story that tells you how. There's one story that shows you how they produced the heat necessary to melt, liquefy stone the way the sun would or where a volcano would. If you ever seen a volcano, guys, what that shit that comes up out of a volcano is liquid and it's running. They call it lava. But when it gets hard, you know what they call it? Rock. Stone. Indigenous stone. Indigenous rock. Volcanic rock. But it creates new land. Once it cools, it turns back into rock. But the volcano, down the center and down the bottom of that volcano, is enough heat to melt rock and have it shoot up at the ground and run like water. You've seen a volcano. You've seen lava. What the hell you think that red hot stuff is that's running out of it? Rock. And as soon as it cools, that's exactly what it will be. Rock. Stone. Get your head around that. When I say the Egyptians can melt rock and stone, that's nothing new. Volcanoes do it all the time. Lava, people. The Hawaiian Islands is just one big volcano-produced island. So the conditions exist to melt rock in a volcano, lava. If you can produce those conditions on Earth, you can melt rock and maybe pour it and build a pyramid without having to lift up. And so I've seen a example of that. Oh, well, a depiction, drawing or whatever, of how that was possible, how the Egyptians were able to fuse, melt stone the way a volcano melts rock, recreating that level of heat. Well, like I told you, China just came up and tested a new reactor called a fusion reactor. It's not like a nuclear reactor. It doesn't break up an atom. It fuses them and creates just as much or more heat. And they say it created a little bit more heat and temperature just over what the sun creates. That's a new deal. That's a new picture. That changes everything. In application and how they will apply it, we'll see. But they finally figured out what the Egyptians knew many, many years ago. I still got a little time, guys. My lines are open. My chat room's open. This part of the show is your part of the show. I call it your time to shine. I'll be monitoring the chat. And my phone number is 319-527-6060. And I got some music for you. Hang in there. you're listening to Revolutionary Life. My name is Gary. I'm your host tonight. Keep in mind that Revolutionary Life is here every weekday night between 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Monday through Friday, guys. So this is our last night this week. We'll be back Monday, of course, with more presentations, with more information for you. We hope to open your eyes about some things since we are called revolutionary, which is just change. You got revolution is change. You guys think everything is change. Sometimes the diametric, the different change, but it's just change. And change is constant. And so we just take a look at these subjects from a revolutionary point of view. I talked to you tonight about ancient Egypt. I started out by telling you to be sure that when you study ancient Egypt, you know what period you're studying. Because conquerors change things when they conquer. They change religions of the people they've conquered. They change the language of the people they conquer. They change the culture of the people they conquer. So a late dynasty is a Greek dynasty. A late dynasty could be a Roman dynasty. And even later one could be an Arabic dynasty. They all conquered Egypt from each other. Greeks to Romans, Romans to Arabs. There is a place, I told you, the science of making gold using the heat of the sun, using fusion, which the ancient Egyptians knew about thousands of years ago, which maybe the Mesoamericans on this side of the world knew about, since they're finding stones that look like they've been subjected to extreme melting and heat. I told you that ancient Egypt did not separate the sciences. There wasn't math over here and biology studied over there. So it's no wonder they had numerology, the combination between life, biology, and math, and numbers. They could see the Fibonacci sequence in your body, and you can too. Just hold out your fingers. They could see the phi ratio in the plants around them and in the world around them. There was no separation between math and biology. There was no separation between astronomy and biology. So it was easy for them to have a philosophy called, or science called, astrology. Because astronomy, the movement of the stars, moon, sun, the universe, affects life on Earth. You don't separate the two and try to understand how life on Earth is being affected by them. They didn't separate biology from astronomy, so they had an astrology. They had a numerology. The church and science did not bump heads in ancient Egypt. They informed each other. The ancient Egyptian says there's only one atom, and from that one came everything else. When they taught their science, they told them there was only one element, hydrogen. They didn't call it that. But from hydrogen came everything else. They just could not figure out how to fuse hydrogen the way the sun does normally, because they couldn't reproduce that kind of heat. where the ancient Egyptians could reproduce that kind of heat, the sun on Earth. And it looks like maybe Mesoamerica figures that out through the Olmec people as well. They're still trying to figure out why these stones are so neatly put in place and have lasted for so long. And there's no mortar holding them together. Like your brick and mortar building has white mortar in between every brick, not in the Egyptian pyramid, not in Machu Picchu in Central and South America, right? Not into the temples and the buildings of ancient Mesoamericans, but they're still standing, mortar or no mortar, and they're set together perfectly. And like the Egyptian pyramids, they're still wondering how they did it. I want to thank everyone who listened in tonight for listening in tonight. Our show is turning lead into gold. It is possible with an understanding and a methodology. I don't know if they got the understanding, but what I hear over in China, they're messing around with the methodology. And so, I'll leave you with that tonight. Your chemistry, your black mystery, your chem mystery, your alchemy. And I'll see you guys Monday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. I hope everybody has a good night. I want to thank everyone who listened in for listening in. I want you to remember to hit that follow button so you know when we are on the air. And also there's a share button. If you know anybody who's interested in this subject, feel free to share it with them. I don't know what they got taught in their chemistry lessons. But there's a lot to learn about chemistry. There's a lot to learn about the electrons and protons that make up your body. Somebody knows about them. Too bad you don't. Thank you again. And I'll see everybody Monday. I'm going to take you guys out of here. And I'm going to see. Let me come up with some music for you. And here we go. Y'all have a great night. And thanks for everyone who listened in for listening in. I appreciate you. Good night.